This is MSONewsSports.com, and this is Connections, a chance to meet your North Shore neighbors. News, politics, left, center, right, newsmakers, people, issues, features. Connections on MSO News Sports.
Yep, that's what it is. I'm Rick Moore, along with Bill Newell, and this is Connections. Good morning, Bill.
Good morning, Rick.
All right, so we're going to get this thing started by telling people what we do. We're going to be taking a look at interviews across the North Shore, and we'll be updating with current events and that kind of thing in this hour that we'll be doing on Thursdays. And we'll tease it in a minute here with what we've got planned for today. But, Bill, just looking back at the news, I don't know, for this week in particular, locally, the first thing that caught my eye was today's news from you, from Lynn, with Governor Baker.
Yeah, Governor Baker was in Salem yesterday. I think one of his stops was at the Bentley School, and one of the reporters kind of talked to him about the mayor's race in Lynn. Now, Mayor Judith Flanagan Kennedy of Lynn is a Republican. Of course, it's a non, you don't necessarily classify yourself as in a party for the mayor's race in or for municipal races, but she is a Republican, and she'll have an opponent. I thought she had a very serious opponent last time around for re-election and won with Tim Phelan. But this time, State Senator Tom McGee will be running. And, of course, he's very formidable, very well known. And so it'll be an interesting race. But the governor said, you know, I like McGee. I'll work well with him. But I guess if it comes down to choosing one over the other, I would pick Mayor Kennedy. So Judith Flanagan Kennedy.
Yeah, Bill, do you remember that happening in past races where the governor would intervene? I know when I talk to people locally for the Gloucester municipal race, for example, last year, it's the first time I've seen people, or 2 years ago, I should say, align by party. And I don't remember seeing that before in local races. Do you?
Well, I don't think you see it too much. I'm trying to think. I mean, but no, because they probably often are of the same party. Some, you know, many times I would think. You know what I mean? So that's why you don't see it too much. So around here.
Well, I don't know, but we'll be obviously watching that and other stuff going on. Anything else catch your eye locally, Bill, or in the North Shore area?
Well, obviously, I think big news out of Salem State. They have a new president. President Meservey stepping down, but John Keenan, a Salem guy, I think he played his football with Ken Perrone at Salem High School, and was a legislator himself, and went to the college several years ago, took a job there, and now was elevated by the trustees last night in the vote to be the school's next president. So John Keenan, 52 years old. We have a complete story up on our webpage with background on John and so on. But congratulations to him. And he is now the new president. And you talk about a campus that has changed, you know, sort of dramatically over the last decade or so. It'd be the Salem State. Used to be college. It's now Salem State University.
Yeah, and one of the things that's been consistent over there too, Bill, has been the leadership from the administrative office before Dr. Meservey, but the last two presidents in particular have been tremendous in moving the campus and the college forward, and hopefully the new president will do the same.
Well, I do remember James
Harrington.
Amsler.
Harrington, yep.
Oh, Harrington. That's
Dr.
Right.
Harrington,
and,
yeah.
And Amsler, well before that, was the president.
Right.
President of Salem State. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right, Bill, taking a look at today, this is kind of, I'm excited about this new thing because it gives us a chance to work together, gives us a chance to maybe consolidate stuff that we do. And obviously, you know, we're trying to hit as many situations and people and things that are happening all over the North Shore as we can. And I think we've got a pretty good lineup today. Let me go through the stuff here and then we can make a comment on it. But we're going to start with the Gloucester Fire Department Chief, Eric Smith. We talked to him earlier about a big fire in Gloucester last week. But he's going to talk to us about upgrades through technology that the fire department in Gloucester is undergoing due to a grant. We'll also talk to Heather Atwood, and Heather is just a great, great storyteller, and she's got a couple of stories she's going to tell today. She is the managing editor of The Other Cape. It's an online magazine focusing primarily on Cape Ann, but they try to attract readers from Boston up to Cape Ann. I'm going to talk to Kate Fox later on. She's the executive director of Destination Salem. Get into what's happening Memorial Day weekend in the area, particularly in Salem, of course, and then maybe touch upon some of the summer events that are coming up in Salem. And then you've got an interview with Mike Schultz. I'll let you comment on that here in a second. And then I'll be talking with Steve Patton. He's the Veterans Services Agent in Peabody. We're going to focus on Memorial Day in our second half hour.
Right, but Memorial Day weekend, this weekend, all the parades happening on Monday around the North Shore. And Mike Schultz is a veteran, a Vietnam-era veteran, and we've called on Mike for a number of different roles here on the website. Great guy, and Mike will be by to talk a bit about that and what Veterans Day, or I'm sorry, Memorial Day means to him. And clearly, sometimes they get Memorial Day, Veterans Day. There's a little mixture there sometimes. And that's okay, but the real meaning of Memorial Day is honoring those that have fought for our country and died serving our country.
All right, and down the road, we're going to have a new feature called Left, Center, Right, and it's not the game you play with dice and money, but rather we're going to talk to people in the area. We've got some people in mind that we're going to use as so-called experts, one from the left, one from the right, and one in the middle, and we'll talk local politics, national politics with that as well. So we're going to look at some events coming up toward the end of the hour, and Bill, I will see you then. Anything else you want to mention?
No, I just want to mention that if folks, one of the things is it shows connection. So we're trying to connect you, the listener, to people on the North Shore. And we hope that maybe you'll be able to shoot us an email. Our email link is up on the top right of the webpage, msonewsports@gmail.com. Shoot us an email and maybe with some guest suggestions, some interesting people. By the way, you know, Rick, I listened to your interview you did with the chief the other day. And, you know, you remember working at the radio station, we knew all the internal fire and police department numbers, and you probably still making those news and fire calls over the years, you probably still know many of them by heart. And I kind of always thought that if I was had my cell phone, this is, you know, and that if I was at an incident and I wanted to call the police, it would be faster for me to call directly to the police department with a number that I might know from the past that is still active. But no, he said, really, the better thing to do is to call 911 off of your cell phone. So that was, you know, instructive for me because of what the call centers now at the police stations, fire stations, I'm guessing now aren't manned like they used to be manned or whatever. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, that was...
Yeah, they're doing. They're on the, you know, controlling the equipment at different events and so on. So, anyways, that it was an interesting thing that I always said had in the back of my head that if I stumbled upon something, you know, because I'd always heard these reports that if you call 911, your call might get directed somewhere from a cell phone. You didn't know where it was going to go to, but whatever. It was a informative.
Absolutely. And it was a surprise to me. I wasn't expecting that. And it makes sense because, you know, you call these old numbers and you get a recording, you know, please listen to our messages as, our numbers have changed and so on. So, yeah, it was good. All right. We'll talk to you toward the end of the hour, Bill.
You got it.
Okay. Very good. Thanks. We'll be right back with more on our connections.
Score early and often this fall with a low-rate residential loan from the Institution for Savings. The Institution for Savings has fantastic rates, low or no fees, great service, and prompt turnaround. Plus, we service our mortgages in-house, so help is always a local phone call away. For more information or to apply online 24/7, visit institutionforsavingsloans.com or call us at 978-462-2344. Institution for Savings, member FDIC and DIF, equal housing lender.
Hi, folks. This is Gerard Moynihan of Moynihan Lumber. If you're thinking of replacing the windows in your home, you should look at the Anderson Woodwright Double Hung Insert Window, which comes with rich wood interiors in oak, pine, or maple. Quite simply, Anderson is the most trusted window in America. That's why we've been selling them for 57 years. Please see the Anderson Woodwright windows on display at any of our three locations in North Reading, Beverly, and Plastow, New Hampshire, or at MoynihanLumber.com.
Moynihan Lumber, we measure up.
With Gloucester Fire Chief Eric Smith now and getting a little bit of an update on what's going on at Gloucester Fire Headquarters. It's been a while since we checked in other than emergency situations. And Chief, maybe a status. I read in the paper recently that there has been another grant that's been awarded on behalf of the fire department. Maybe you could bring us up to speed on that.
Yeah, so the federal government was kind enough to appreciate our application and the work that the guys at have put those together for us did, and have awarded us an additional grant. This one's actually more money than the last one. So this one, the federal share, and this in particular is going to be for portable radios. It's the FEMA's Assistance to Firefighters grant, and it focuses primarily on safety and items and programs and training that you need regarding and around safety for firefighters, which translates into safety for the public. So if they want to keep the first responders, you know, alive and well and moving in the right direction and able to do their job appropriately within the standards in the industry, and that obviously leads to us having successful responses for the public. So this grant in particular, like I said, is for portable radios. Ours are pretty old, and they're actually not even manufactured. It's getting difficult to even get them repaired anymore, and they're expensive. So the grant that we originally put in for was about almost $550,000 to replace 85 portable radios and some other associated equipment for programming and maintenance of those. But FEMA kind of pared that down a little bit by five radios. In part, I think, just due to our staffing levels, and that they don't want to give you too much extra equipment, so to speak. But we keep a small cache of radios on one of the trucks. In those instances, when we have mutual aid, like we did the other day with, you know, a four-alarm fire, if we need to hand out radios to companies that don't have our radio frequency programmed into their equipment, of which we don't control, then they have to be able to talk to us to operate safely. So, we're going to have to work out how we're going to maintain that cash, being that this grant's a little bit short. But the grant is still a great opportunity for us. The federal government's going to provide almost $470,000. The city's got to match it with just under $50,000. And that will get us, 80 portable radios, the appropriate training for our communications officer and personnel. And it's hopefully going to translate to a major difference in our on-scene operations. The radios that we currently have only operate on VHF, and throughout Essex County and even here in our own community, we have public safety operating on both the VHF and the UHF bands. So our current portable radios can only operate on VHF. The new ones that we're going to look into and are the goal for us to purchase are going to operate on both bands. So that allows us to communicate with every fire department within the county, as well as our police department here in Gloucester. They operate on the UHF frequencies, whereas, like I said, we're VHF. Coast Guard, Harbor Master's on VHF already, so that works out pretty well currently. But we're using some pretty old equipment, and it's long in the tooth and definitely at the end of its service life. So this grant is going to bring us up to speed, just like the last one did with our air packs, and bring us into, the latest technology and a new package to where, we'll get that longevity that we need out of it, really for a pretty short investment on the city side. You're 10% match, 10 cents on the dollar. That's not something that you want to walk away from. And our CAO is all in on these things, and he's encouraged us to go after any grant that we can that falls into this situation where it's equipment that is critically necessary, things that we know we need to replace either now or in the very near future, and we're getting this kind of opportunity and support in way of a grant from the federal government that is providing 90 cents on the dollar. This is a great deal, not only for us as, individually, but for the community. So we're pretty happy about that. I wish I could take the credit, but, the bulk of the credit goes back to both Captain LaGrande, who wrote the original basic grant that we did for the self-contained breathing apparatus, the air packs, that we won last year, and we built upon that. Lieutenant Ouellette, Nick Ouellette, is our communications officer. He took that framework and revised it with the current data for run volume and so forth, and tweaked it up to be specific towards radios versus air packs. But a lot of the same basic information that was put together by Tom for the SCBA grant, the makeup of the community, what our demographics are, what our risks are, the composition of our fire department, how many calls we go on, the current condition of the budget, if you will, and its ability to afford these things that we need, that we just don't have the full funding within the city to do it, but it's critical that we get it done now. So he built upon that grant, and again, it was successful, and it's actually, you know, this grant is worth, you know, a little over more than $100,000 than the last one. So we're definitely on the right path. The guys are doing a great job with, you know, stepping up, because this is well above and beyond what their job description requires of them. You know, they're line firefighters, and they're doing high-level administrative work in support of not only this office, but the city as a whole. So I can't thank these guys enough, and it's not just the one or two guys that, you know, have their name on the grant. They've had help from all the officers that they work with, from City Hall and their support, a lot of the data from the assessor's office to help build out the full picture of the city, you know, from the CFO's office as to the financial condition of the city and our ability to either afford the match and but not afford the full amount to purchase this equipment. So it's, you know, one of those things that brings in a lot of people that don't get a lot of credit for the work they did. But it is an all-hands thing.
So, sort of like offensive linemen in football.
Yeah, absolutely. Almost exactly like that, plus, you know, plus the equipment guy that's helping them get their gear on, and the guy that flew the plane, drove the bus, all those things that got everybody in the right place at the right time to where the federal government smiled upon us and said yes yet again. 2 years in a row is kind of unheard of, and I'm hoping that we can, you know, make it three in a row next year, because there are still several other things that we need to address that are going to be difficult to afford that we really need.
Getting new radios, will that help? I know that I talked a couple of years ago, there was a problem with a transmitter or the transmitters from one place to another. Is the equipment upgraded at the fire station as well?
No, so the federal government has kind of gotten out of the business, if you will, for handling or assisting or paying. In most situations, they don't want to pay for your infrastructure for your radio system network. So our repeater network that has, you know, four receivers and a couple transmitters, plus the equipment in our dispatch center and the outskirt stations, that is not something that they're really readily willing to pay for unless you really, really bring a very strong argument and case for them. They've gotten out of building dispatch center business, if you will, and radio system. And we were advised quite appropriately by our regional representative through FEMA that, hey, you want to focus on fire ground activities and equipment that protect your firefighters. And when we're on the fire ground, we really don't utilize that full radio network. We'll switch channels and go direct. So it's really communications that are man-to-man, person-to-person, on that incident that are direct and don't go through that system, because you want to take all the variables out of it that you can that could interfere in communications. And by going analog, line of sight, radio to radio, does that. And we're in a small geographic area, so there's no need for a large coverage network. We need that for dispatching. We need that for station alerting, but we don't need it when we're working on 1, 2, 4 houses within a one block stretch.
What are the priorities with that person-to-person radio network? In other words, who talks and when?
So, you know, communications are pretty straightforward on the fire ground. You know, you only really get on the radio and provide communication in either directions in the form of orders, tasking, and assignments, which come from the incident commander, and then obviously a response acknowledging the assignment of a task or, you know, some type of function that you need to fulfill, and then updates as to when you accomplish or fail to accomplish a task. You know, if you're told to, you know, ventilate a particular portion of the building and come to find out that that's not possible due to the construction of the building or the situation, that's one of those things that you'd report back to the incident commander, let them know that, hey, we're unable to take care of this task that you assigned us because of this reason. And typically communications are all done from officer to officer. The firefighters are all issued the radios, and but the, you know, the typically that, and that's why the federal government does fund it, is that's really just a safety valve for them. You know, routine communications during the course of the day over the radio are done by anyone that needs to communicate. But when we're at an incident, there's definitely a hierarchy, a chain of command, and so those communications typically come from the top down. Mm-hmm. And once it goes from the officer level down to the firefighter level, that's usually face-to-face from that company-level officer, that lieutenant or captain, to the company that is with him. So his 2, 3, 4 personnel that are assigned to him, they stick together, they stay together, they're within arm's reach of each other typically, or within line of sight at least, and so they're able to communicate off the radio amongst themselves while they accomplish whatever, you know, objectives that they have. And again, you know, it's that officer-to-officer communication, and try to minimize who's on the radio. Less is more, kind of, when you're, you know, in the middle of an emergency and there's a lot of air traffic. It starts to blur together. So it's, you know, the scenes are loud, the trucks are loud, it's difficult to hear as it is. So when you really need to communicate something back and forth, that radio frequency needs to be open so the bosses can get done what they need to get done.
Finally, Chief, maybe you could update personnel for me. You have a retirement in the firehouse coming up, and contracts and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, so contract-wise, the union and the city have gotten together and have started the negotiation process. We do have, I think we've got a meeting scheduled coming up in here in the near future, but with everybody's schedules and summer coming, it kind of tends to slow things down and stretch it out, trying to coordinate schedules. So that's still a work in progress. We're hoping to move through it quickly, but we'll just see how the timing allows that to happen. As far as retirements, we've got a couple that are retiring at the end of the month, and then a couple more at the beginning of at the end of June, rather, and then a couple more at the beginning of July. So we'll have we just brought in 2 new hires to replace a couple of folks that retired months ago, and it's just kind of a slow process, and part of it is financial. We have to wait till the money catches up to that new employee, and we have the ability to pay them. You know, when folks retire, whatever leave banks they have left, you know, the law requires that we pay those off, so that comes out of the same line item in some cases, and so we need to just wait until the balance sheet is back to equal and that we can bring in the new hires. So we just brought on too, like I said, and they are officially off their orientation period and working on the line, scheduled to go to the academy in September. And like I said, we'll have, you know, 4 more retirements that'll take place end of June, beginning of July, and those hirings probably won't happen until well after July, likely into August. Summer is kind of a tough time to get that stuff done. It kind of picks up around here. We get pretty busy with a lot of events, and the time it takes to do the orientation and get them into the fire academy while we're in the midst of being pretty busy ourselves is not the most advantageous time to do it. So we like to try to get it all in before summer and have those folks up to speed to kind of assist with the workload versus become kind of part of the workload while we're trying to get them trained. So we probably will defer that to late summer when those hirings will take place.
All right, Chief, see you in the fall.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, everybody behaved well over the burn season. The woods are still pretty dry. I know we've had a lot of rain, but that doesn't eliminate all of the dead trees and foliage and everything that are out there. So we still stress and ask and somewhat beg folks to be extremely careful in your own yards, that especially those that back to the woods. Fires can extend quickly, and there is a lot of fire load out in the woods that we need to really be cautious about right now. So that's kind of the concern for the summer coming up.
Gloucester Fire Chief Eric Smith.
Sunday brunch at the Gloucester House. The brunch includes Gloucester House baked haddock, grilled beef tips, fruit-filled crepes, chicken, potatoes, and much, much more. Sundays from 10 to 2, $20 for adults, $12 for children. The Gloucester House, on the water at 63 Rogers Street in Gloucester. Owner Lenny Linquata.
This is the freshest seafood you can get, from our boats to your plate.
Okay, it's been a little overdue. We're back at the Pleasant Street Tea Company with Heather Atwood of The Other Cape and Food for Thought, both of those.
Both, 2 now. There I have go. 2 sites.
Okay, and what's interesting is I never know where we're going to go. Even when we did just food, I wasn't sure where we were going to go. But I do know that we're in the middle of the 30s in terms of the world's best dishes. Is that
exactly.
right?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So you can usually, with me, Rick, feel pretty confident that we're going to go someplace that you are not comfortable. Right?
Automatic.
Right? So I think
unless
this...
it's ketchup or chips.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. Right. And they were on the list, mm-hmm. I think. So mm-hmm. those were good days for you.
Absolutely.
This is not a good day for you. Maybe I'd say 30% of it is okay. But we are at number 35 and 34. On mm-hmm. the list of the world's best, greatest dishes. Mm-hmm. Number 35 is something called chili crab.
Chili crab.
Right, right. Now, isn't it amazing that you don't know what most of the dishes on this list are,
mm-hmm,
right?
Mm-hmm.
And most of them, not most of them, but a high percentage of them are from Southeast Asia.
Okay.
And chili crab is from Singapore. And, you know, I don't know whether it's simply there are more people voting in Southeast Asia or the food is really better. I actually think it's delicious food.
Mm-hmm.
But chili crab is a dish that kind of officially hit the streets, literally the streets of Singapore in 1956. A Singaporean couple began making chili crab out of their pushcart and selling it in the streets. And it was instantly a hit, and I think like in the 90s, they opened their first restaurant. It took them that long to open a restaurant, but there is the chili crab restaurant in Singapore. It's called Palm Beach, and that's where you go to get the most authentic chili crab. Do you want to know what chili crab is?
Absolutely.
Okay. So I'll give you the really
quick... It's not a crab that needs a jacket, right? No.
No. I'll give you the really quick Heather Atwood recipe.
Okay.
Ginger, scallions, garlic goes into a hot pan, soften those, add the crabs, toss them around in those aromatics, add some broth, either chicken broth or crab broth, chili sauce, tomato paste, and let it simmer. That's basically it.
Okay.
At the very end, you thicken it with a little cornstarch and an egg.
That's not as exotic as I thought.
Right? Yeah, okay. No, it's really not. Do you eat crab? Do you like crab? Yeah. Okay. There's the face.
Okay.
So that's number 35. And number 34, this is going to melt your little heart. It's maple syrup.
All right.
Right?
There we go.
Okay. So I don't think I need to say much more about maple syrup, right?
Well, maybe where the best maple syrup comes from, because I know that we had some time. Larry Jacobs, a friend of mine who lives in Beverly, went up country, and I think he brought it back from way up in Maine, it was fresh maple syrup, and it was just delicious. But I mean, is it the same everywhere?
No, and I think the grade is the big deal, right? Whether you like the finest grade, which is the lightest color, or whether you like, you know, the stuff that's down at the bottom of the big pan.
That's all I know. It was thick.
Was it dark?
Yeah.
See, that's the way I like it, but that is considered a lower grade. I think that's from the bottom of the pan when it's been cooking down a lot. So, actually, I'm not really sure how many variations in flavor there are. Here is one thing that I heard someplace, that the flavor actually comes from the bacteria that is in the sap, and that it's not actually, it really is more like water until that bacteria hits it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Fermentation.
Well, we have bacteria in our stomach. That's good stuff. So.
Exactly.
Okay, so now where do we go?
So, I would like to talk a little bit about spring on Cape Ann. And there are two lovely stories. One is a story about loss and a story about the return of something special.
Mm-hmm.
So last year, a beloved greenhouse called Goose Cove Gardens closed. Barbara Dombrowski had Goose Cove Gardens for maybe, I don't know, something like 17 years. And her plants were just the highest quality plants you can find. They were organic. She nursed these little seedlings, you know, starting in February in her greenhouses. She cared for them so tenderly. And they were every plant I ever bought from her was just incredibly healthy. I have a bay tree right now that started out as a little 4-inch thing, and it's almost 5 feet tall. So she was just a really special person, and her plants were really high quality. I know people with very serious gardens who would shop there.
Hmm.
But she decided she'd had enough, and she was going to close.
Hmm.
And many hearts were broken, I'm telling you. We were all thinking, what are we going to do? These plants were so wonderful. What will we do? But she sort of handed her mantle over to a young guy named Tucker Smith in West Gloucester. Tucker Smith and Elise Gilson, his partner, are now have reproduced the Barbara Dombrowski business in West Gloucester. Their business is called Cedar Rock Farms. They have the most beautiful, healthy little seedlings you can imagine. And Barbara's big thing was Tomato Day. I mean, there would be a line down whatever that street was over there in Goose Cove on Tomato Day. People would start getting in line at 7 o'clock in the morning for her tomato plants. And now Tucker and Elise have the tomato plants, they have the herbs, they have the perennials. My favorite plant of all that Barbara Dombrowski used to sell was something called Only the Lonely. It was Nicotiana, and it, you know, you don't know what Nicotiana is, do you? He's rolling his eyes
it's
for our...
It's sold by Los Angeles.
Yeah, right. So Nicotiana is this wonderful plant. It's an annual. It grows to be about 3 feet tall, and it has a huge white bloom, and that bloom is so fragrant at night. You only smell it at night. So when you walk by, you see this, you know, glowing white flower, and it has this intoxicating fragrance. So I thought I would never have Only the Lonely again, but lo and behold, Tucker Smith and Elise Gilson have those little seedlings over there. Yeah.
I know this stuff, you know, sometimes. Yeah, really.
Well, don't ask me about sports.
So where in West Gloucester is this, do you know, specifically?
Cedar Rock Farms is, I don't know the street address, but I can tell you on 133, there is a sign right on the street that says, you know, it's a printed sign, Cedar Rock Gardens.
Is it closer to Essex or Gloucester?
It's closer to Essex.
Okay.
Yeah, it's down there. You wind all through that neighborhood. There's a river, you know.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
All right, well, I'll have to look it up and see if we can find it. No, that's fascinating, and it's good to know that, because plants are people, too.
Yeah, they are. They are. And good plants are better than bad plants.
Well, that is great, and that is good news. Now, we move on to the animal world, I guess.
Yep, the animal world. And springtime here.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so spring means rhubarb and spring lettuces and peas. But for lots of people, including me, springtime means squid.
Mm-hmm.
The squid start arriving in May, and the fishermen get really excited because the squid are jumping out of the water out there in Nantucket Sound. They arrive there first in New England. And what's really exciting for the fishermen is all the other fish are following the squid. So the squid are the sign that the season has begun. And it's, you know, people don't quite realize that eating squid is a true springtime tradition in New England. And that's probably the freshest thing you'll get right now.
Okay.
And I have a couple of recipes on my blog. I'm about to post them.
Okay. All right, so let's talk about the blog and the other cape. What's upcoming in each?
Okay, so my blog is will simply be those squid recipes. I'm going to post them. The recipes came from a seafood throwdown that happened at the Boston Public Market last spring, last May. And the chefs who produced them were Charles Draghi from Herbalucci, a restaurant in Boston, and Chef Duarte from a restaurant called Taranta in the North End. And they're really good recipes. One is Peruvian, one's Italian, one's spicy with black olives. The other has lots of cilantro and lime. It's delicious. Anyway, that's my blog. The other cape, ta-da, has a launch party tomorrow evening. We are having a little get-together at Shorten, Maine. It will cost $10 per person, and there will be food, a cash bar, and we are launching our first video.
Okay.
So we're going to have a series on the other cape of videos. They're going to be called one-person shows, and we find a local person we think is significant, and they talk on camera about Cape Ann.
Sounds like we have a rival here, but that's tremendous. And I should point out that we're going to be airing this on Thursday, so this party would have taken place on Wednesday.
Oh, right. That's true.
Okay.
Yeah. So, no rivals at all, just friends
and
partners.
That sounds great.
Yeah.
That sounds excellent. All right. Anything else that we should know about springtime, the other cape, or food for thought?
Okay. Well, I'll say right now, on the other cape, there's a beautiful story about Mayflower Confections. This is a company owned by a young woman named Jocelyn Pierce, and she got best wedding cakes in Boston last year from Boston Magazine. And there is a picture of her beautiful cakes on our site and a whole story about where she came from and why she does this and why she lives on Cape Ann.
Yeah. All right, Memorial Day weekend, does your family do cookouts, or how's that work?
My family's tradition, Memorial Day weekend, is two things. We go to the Rockport Memorial Day Parade, which is one of the sweetest traditions, I think, in the whole world. It's very tender. You see all those veterans, and they are, it's really a noble, noble procession. And almost the whole town walks up to the cemetery. A fifth grader reads that poem.
Flanders Field.
Yeah. And then they have, you know, the response to Flanders Field. It is just heartbreaking, that ceremony. Mm-hmm. It's really beautiful. And then we go home and eat Brothers Brew donuts.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, my dad was an Iwo Jima veteran, and he did three tours in Vietnam. And it is a great day to remember all those who have made our lives so much easier. And he never once felt bad about having fun on Memorial Day weekend either. Go celebrate.
Well, good for him. All right, good for him.
That is Heather Atwood with, I was going to say, with the story behind the recipe, but it's the story behind the story behind everything.
MSONewsSports.com is known for connecting North Shore sports fans with local sports newsmakers. Features on teams and players. Exclusive video interviews following the big games. Live event coverage such as high school football, basketball, hockey, and baseball. Live video coverage of the Gloucester Fiesta. MSO also connects you to the area news leaders, mayors, state representatives, state senators, town administrators, city and town elected officials, business leaders, and more. Entertainment features. Follow us on Twitter or Facebook at MSO News Sports. Email us at msonewsports@gmail.com. Leave a voice message anytime, 978-325-3638. Stay connected to your North Shore neighbors by simply clicking on msonewsports.com.
All right. I just have to hit the right head. MSO, we have connections. Our initial effort here, I don't know why. There we go. All right, now I'm seeing. Okay, Kate Fox is with us. Kate Fox is the executive director of Destination Salem as we switch gears now and begin to focus a little bit on Memorial Day weekend and summertime. Good morning, Kate.
Good morning, Rick. How are you?
Just doing great on this end. How are things on your end of the North Shore here?
Things are good. We're ready for Memorial Day, and after the rain over Mother's Day weekend, I think we're all looking for a do-over.
Okay. Now, you know, this has been a very... a politically charged springtime. It has been, obviously, we've been affected by yet another tragedy over in England. And there is a lot going on in Salem. A lot of, I don't want to say tension, but there's some anxiety in the city, but there's a whole lot of good stuff going on. And I think we really ought to start with this weekend. I don't know if there are specific activities pointed toward Memorial Day that you could talk about, but we could start there as we're getting into the summer season.
Well, there are definitely Memorial Day commemorations in Salem, as there are in most communities. There will be a parade and wreath laying, and so that the city organizes all of those events. So that will be on Monday, the 29th, with the cemetery at Greenlawn Cemetery, and the parade in Salem goes up North Street. So that's always a nice commemoration of the day. And then it's sort of the official kickoff to summer, and so all the harbor cruises and the sails are starting up, and the Peabody Essex Museum just opened a tremendous new exhibit called Ocean Liners last weekend. So no matter what the weather is, there's going to be something to do in Salem this weekend.
All right. So now you started it. You said it. Summer, there's an astronomical summer that I think starts on June 20, June 21. But let's get into the real summer, which starts on Memorial Day. What are some of the things lined up from Destination Salem's viewpoint this summer?
For the whole summer, not just this weekend, looking big picture.
Well,
the Salem Arts Festival coming up June 2nd, 3rd, and 4th, so just next weekend.
Mm-hmm.
And the Jazz and Soul Festival in August is always a really popular weekend down at Salem Willows. Free music all weekend long. And they have a summer music series that leads up to the full festival, so there's always live music. A lot of it is free on weekends in Salem. And the classic antique and classic boat show will be back in August. There's always something going on in Salem.
Yeah, there is. And I know I'm not even going to bring up October, but I know that that's pretty much a year-round activity in terms of preparation, isn't it?
It is. We're already working really hard on October programming. We're looking forward to bringing in some new Wednesday evening family-friendly programming this year, which are going to be called Wicked Wednesdays, and that'll be our new initiative. Last year we introduced the Haunted Harmonies Acapella Festival. That will be back. So October, we're full steam towards October, but there's an awful lot to do between now and then.
That's amazing. Well, Kate, you know, we should mention the website because you can lay it out for us as to what information is up there and how people can access it.
Sure. So salem.org is our website, and it is fully interactive, and you can create your own adventure to come into Salem, build an itinerary, or just find out who's playing live music tonight.
Mm-hmm. All right. And what did you say the very next activity will be after next weekend?
Next weekend is the Salem Arts Festival.
Salem Arts Festival.
That's free. It's family friendly. There will be vendors, artisans, performances, a juried gallery of art on display and for sale. So all weekend starts Friday, goes through Sunday.
All right. And finally, once again, you know, Kate, we should mention parking in Salem because I think, you know, people do tend to take, public transportation in October, but not so much during the rest of the year. So maybe you could once again mention the ins and outs of driving into Salem.
Sure. So there are two parking garages downtown, right, and a couple of surface lots. And we also have the new MBTA garage at the top of Washington Street. Parking in Salem costs anywhere from 25 cents to $1.50 an hour. There is a parking app called the Passport app, and you can find all the parking information on that website, salem.org. We also, Rick, have a new bike share program called Zagster, and so you park, and everything's walkable, but if you don't want to walk, for $3 an hour, you can borrow a bike, and so you can take a bike out near Federal Street at the T station and ride it down to the Gables or Salem Willows, and they come with bike locks, so $3 an hour, you can ride your bike all over town.
You guys think of everything. Well, is there anything else you want to mention, Kate? I'll be dropping in when I interview the mayor next month, but between now and then, anything that you want to add?
You know what? There is one more thing. There is a new augmented reality exhibit that is going to be at the Salem Maritime National Historic Site. It opens, I guess, this weekend, so we're going to be able to use our smartphones to see a virtual reality in front of us about the ecology and the history of Salem Maritime National Historic Site. I can't wait to see what they've put together because this is new media, so it'll be exciting, and that launches this weekend.
Absolutely. Kate, thanks for taking the time out of your busy schedule, and I'll see you next month. In the meantime, have a terrific weekend.
Thanks, you too.
Thank you, Kate. Take care.
Bye-bye.
That is Kate Fox, who is the executive director of Destination Salem. And again, the Destination Salem website is simply salem.org. It's that easy. And boy, they have everything up there for you and easily accessed to. You can find out anything you need to know about what's going on in Salem. Once again, this is Connections. It's our Thursday program from 11 to 12. Bill Newell will be back toward the end of the hour. We'll go over some Memorial Day activities in the area. Also coming up, we have an interview with Mike Schultz, a PBD Vietnam War veteran, on his perspective of Memorial Day. We'll also talk with Steve Patton, who is the Veteran Services Agent in the city of Peabody. Those interviews are still coming. So please stay with us. Once again, this is Connections, and we hope to do this most Thursdays, if not every Thursday here, on MSO News Sports. I'm Rick Moore. Bill Newell is with us as well. Bill Proposky, our producer and engineer. We'll be back.
Sylvan Street, a great place to eat and drink and meet with family and friends at Sylvan Street. We'll treat you right, day or night, satisfy your appetite. Eat, drink, and chill at the Sylvan Street Grill.
Catch a game with friends, meet for lunch, cocktails after work, or a romantic dinner for two. Whatever your plan to do it at Sylvan Street Grill in Peabody and Salisbury. See you at Sylvan Street.
Eat, drink, and chill at the Sylvan Street Grill.
Hi, folks. This is Gerard Moynihan of Moynihan Lumber. If you're replacing the windows in your home, please see the Anderson 400 Series windows on display at any of our three locations in North Reading, Beverly, or Plaistow, New Hampshire. The Anderson 400 is attractive, durable, energy efficient, and reasonably priced. Remember, Anderson is the most trusted name in windows. See the Anderson 400 at any of our three locations. That's North Reading, Beverly, or Plaistow, New Hampshire, or at MoynihanLumber.com.
Moynihan Lumber. measure up.
This is MSO News Sports. I'm Bill Newell, and we are joined by Mike Schultz of Peabody, and we're talking about Memorial Day. Mike is a veteran, served in the military. Well, why don't you tell us about your military service? And by the way, we're not confusing a veteran with Memorial Day. We'll make that distinction very clear. And but yet, you know, I feel that veterans have a clear insight into Memorial Day. So that's why we have you here, Mike, I think. But but I guess tell us about your service, and then we'll talk about Memorial Day in Peabody coming up this year.
Okay, Bill, I served in the Navy from 1966 to 1970. I was Naval Air Force. We were a patrol squadron. We mostly were against Russian submarines, which were quite active at that time, mostly Norwegian Sea, based out of Iceland, et cetera. Had two tours of Iceland at that time. So I was in for 4 years, came back, you know, faced all the things, went on, worked. You know, and you know, now I'm just an old retired veteran, but I do a lot of stuff. I'm sort of a veterans activist in Peabody, et cetera. And Memorial Day in Peabody, Peabody is just one of these places that is really, really good at honoring its veterans. I think it was 1992. They had a tricentennial parade or something like that. It was 75 years. I forget what number that is as a city. And they asked me to organize Vietnam vets for their first homecoming. So we put it together. Oh, it was unbelievable. We had about 160, 170 guys all dressed in like black pants, white shirts, and caps that they bought them. And we got together. We had a marvelous time. People really gave us a welcome home. And we went someplace afterwards and got together. And everybody decided, they said, thank you. We do not want to organize. Nobody wanted to organize. I tried to do it a couple times after that for a couple of parades at Peabody. They hosted the American Legion from all over the country and a few other things. And Peabody's kind of famous for their parades. But, you know, there is no organized Vietnam vets group. A lot of them have, you know, feelings about what it was when they came back, you know. And they were really the only group that got treated that way. But that's over with now. I mean, most of us, we've moved on. A lot of people have moved on, et cetera. But now when you come to Memorial Day, this year Peabody is doing something special. They're giving the victory medal to about, I think maybe 8 people out of the 13 that are on the wall in Peabody. And that's for the Gold Star families, their closest relative, and there's a medal, and they're doing a really nice shadow box, et cetera. Steve Patton, the VSO there, has done a great job. We've done all the research trying to find everybody on the wall. There's only like 2 people that we haven't been able to find. I think it was Carter and Manny. Those are the 2 that we're trying to find for we can do it the next year or something like that. And then we're going to Korea and things like that and back into World War II for the closest families of the Gold Star. But Peabody itself has really done a great job on doing, they name streets and parks, and I don't think there's any town around or city around that has as many parks and streets named for its veterans. And there's actually, I think Peabody Magazine is doing a story on that. As a matter of fact, we just rededicated a park, Ross Park up in West Peabody, that used to be known as Citeny Park. It's been Ross Park, and now it's rededicated with a new plaque and new flag, et cetera. And we just had that ceremony, and we're going to do some more things also. But the thing people have to realize is there's 2 different days here. We have Memorial Day, and we have Veterans Day, okay? And the confusion lies with honoring veterans. Well, Memorial Day is one for a certain purpose. It originally was Decoration Day after the Civil War. And then it went from there to Memorial Day to honor the dead, the people that were killed in the war. That's what Memorial Day is for. It's not for, you know, Jones Ford to have a happy Memorial Day sale, and for, you know, the local mall to have Memorial Day hours and happy Memorial Day and stuff like that. It really sickens me, you know, when those holidays were taken away and a lot of the observances were cut back because nobody was showing up because people had to work. You know, it's generally people that working, you know, that were veterans. And basically, you know, the service is good. But they've been making a little bit of a rally. We'll have a parade this year in Peabody and then that service. But, you know, I can remember growing up, I grew up in Lynn, and there was like a parade for, you know, Memorial Day, Armistice Day, Veterans Day, you know, they, 4th of July, there was always a parade. But, you know, you get fewer and fewer people to march now, too. World War One vets pretty much gone. Korean vets, you know, they were a small number to start off with, and a lot of them are going. And now the Vietnam vets are starting to go. And, you know, you got the young Gulf War vets and stuff like that coming up, and they don't really have any organization yet. So we're hoping to see them get together because we've got to carry on this Memorial Day service thing. But Memorial Day service is something people should go attend. It's not just a day to buy balloons and stuff like that. It's a day to honor the military dead that, you know, that fought for our country and died there, and that's what it really should be, and not something with sales. So,
and I want to clarify something that you said too, Mike, just a moment ago. When you talk about taking the holiday away, you're referring to the fact that it used to be the stores were closed on Memorial Day. It used to be they were closed on 4th of July, but let's just leave it at Memorial Day. It seemed like that if there was one day, Christmas, you know, days like that, that you would, the stores would, Thanksgiving, the stores would be closed. But since that's that has all changed, and so, and I get that, and I understand that piece, and it was, it's a reverent. Question five, yeah.
Yeah, that's what it was.
Yeah. But it was, it's a reverent holiday, and that kind of thing, and that, and by having the stores open, it does change the flavor for sure, as us old timers would say.
Yes, and I hope everybody goes down to their local services because most places are having them. You know, Peabody, Lynn, et cetera. And, you know, contact the local VSO, Veteran Service Officer at your city or town. See if you can help with flagging graves and things like that. There's stuff that people need. And I was reading today a letter from Peter Morandi, the VSO, in Danvers, looking for people to march because, you know, they're getting less and less people able to march. You know, I mean, if they did something for Vietnam vets, they'd probably have to have some kind of a float because a lot of them couldn't walk that distance. Yeah. So, and we're like the newest, one of the newest ones. So it's something to, you know, go to your VSO, go to your local city and town celebration, but, you know, memorial thing. But, you know, they're very interesting. They're really good, and you get to see a lot of people in honor because everybody's got somebody that was killed someplace.
Yeah. Mike, anything else more about what happens on Memorial Day in Peabody, in particular this year?
No, this year they will have that award ceremony that they're doing with the Victory Medal, with the eight or nine people, I think, is doing it. That'll be at the end of the parade. That'll be in front of City Hall. And they will have the families there and award them the shadow boxes with all the paraphernalia in them that Steve Patton, the VSO, has put together. So it's really a nice thing. First time it's been done, and we may be doing it every year because Peabody has like the big, on Veterans Day, they have a Veterans Breakfast that the mayor puts together. Mayors from, you know, the past, et cetera, have always done something with it. But Mayor Betancourt has done, he's really gone out of his way on this. And he's done so far, you know, the World War II, the Korean vets, and then last year was the Vietnam vets. And then in a couple of years, he'll do Gulf vets, et cetera. So he's done a great job. And they have a breakfast, and they give a medal from the city to the participants. So it's really a great thing. The Peabody just does a great job with veterans.
Yeah. It may be, you know, I'm as you're talking, Mike, I'm just thinking you mentioned the Gulf War vets, but you think about the whether they're in Iraq, whether they're in the, Afghanistan, those. It's a blur kind of, even we're living through this now, they're still deployed, they're still dying, and you know, you still have Gold Star families, you know, and so on. But you know, as a veteran, I does this all feel different now or what?
Well, you know, the thing that's different with Peabody is we haven't lost anybody,
okay, since Vietnam. So we have nobody on there. Like Swampscott's lost a couple, and, you know, Marblehead has lost a couple, and yeah, things like that. And, you know, the difference is, you know, one thing during my era is when you went to Vietnam, that was it, okay? You only went once. Okay, now when they have the volunteers thing, some of them are back, but like a congressman's back 3-4 times, you know. He was 4 tours of Afghanistan, and he was in combat, you know, so he was something. And like Steve, the VSO in Peabody, he's been over, I think twice, and he's airborne. You know, et cetera, JAG officer, but he's airborne. So, you know, he's got himself a Bronze Star and a few other things like that. So, you know, we'll be happy to honor, you know, people. But other places are more active with it because they lost somebody.
Yeah.
We just haven't, you know.
Mike, I want to touch on one other thing away from Memorial Day, and that was about a week or so ago. You were honored at the Historical Society, right?
Yes.
Tell me about that piece, because we're looking at this beautiful clock that you have here, set to the right time, by the way. It's working, and it's
what is it called?
It's with a hands on it, but tell us about the award and that night in particular.
Okay, for the Peabody Historical Society, very generously awarded me their Pioneer Award, which I was shocked about.
I didn't know you were that old.
Yeah.
I was there with Bill Toomey, who served like 35 years, you know, just on the city council or something like that. And he was still looking for his coonskin cap,
yeah,
you know. But it was a great ceremony. It was held up at the Brooksby Barn, which... you know, they brought up that I was the one that, you know, had started the Save Brooksby Committee, and we are going to do a talk on that at some point, because there were other people involved in that. Yes, I did start it, but, you know, it was a group that finished it, and then all the different items that I had donated to them, and I was really appreciative of it. And they gave me this beautiful mantle clock with my name engraved on it, and 2017 Pioneer Award. So I was quite proud of it. It's actually something I really enjoyed.
Yeah. You and Daniel Boone.
Yes. Yeah. Daniel Boone, congressman from Tennessee, Kentucky. Oh, no, that was Davy Crockett.
Yeah. You know. Whatever. There you go. And but anyways, Mike, great talking with you. And again, we'll check back and hope it's a great Memorial Day in the city of Peabody.
Yes, they do a great job. You know, people do some things afterwards at the American Legion and stuff like that. So it's a great day to get out, honor people, instruct your children why they're there, not just for the balloons, but, you know, that they're there to honor somebody, and let them, you know, go down, and they always like to see the guns being fired, you know. But then, you know, many of us flinch, you know, whenever it goes off. But I'll be there and, you know, enjoy the day and, you know, think of our past and the people that gave their lives, you know, for the freedom that we have now.
Gotcha. Well said. Mike Schultz, I'm Bill Newell, and this is MSO News Sports.
Many aspects of estate planning are interrelated, and you can turn to attorney Bob Madruga for full-service estate planning to help you develop a comprehensive plan in providing for your future. Bob will work with you through the years to adapt your plan as needed, and he can assist you with managing wills, trust, probate, and taxes. Visit the law offices of Robert J. Madruga at 128 Main Street, Gloucester, or call today for an appointment at 978-283-6883.
Joining us now on the phone is Steve Patton, who is a veteran of the Armed Forces, 82nd Airborne, and he is the veteran service agent in the city of Peabody. And Steve, welcome to MSO.
Hello, thank you for having me on.
Well, Steve, let's start, first of all, with the big question for me is,
you know, obviously as a veteran who did not have to go to combat, Memorial Day means something different to me than it might to you guys. So what does Memorial Day mean to you as a combat veteran?
Memorial Day is a very special day because we're recognizing the service members who made the ultimate sacrifice for the country and all of the freedoms that we enjoy every day. And as a member of the 82nd Airborne Division, I was part of two combat tours in Afghanistan. And during that time, my unit, the 4th Brigade Combat Team, lost 51 soldiers by various ways, IEDs, direct fire, whatnot. So I was able to see not only the sacrifice that they made, how the unit pulled together around them, but also the impact that it had on the families back home. So it hits close to home. It's a very, very special day. And at City Hall, we're doing a number of things this year to recognize those families that family members of service members who gave their lives.
How long ago was your last tour?
So my tour, I came back September 7th, 2012.
Okay, so that's very, very recent. I imagine with veterans that you deal with in the city of Peabody, some of them probably go back many, many, many years. But on Memorial Day, is it sort of more vivid? Do you have the memories come back right smack into your eyeballs?
Yes, because as a judge advocate, I was responsible for line of duty investigations, and it played a role in the family notifications afterwards as well. So it does hit home. It resonates to this day. One of the couple of the things I remember is the ramp ceremonies that would happen in Kandahar in Bagram Airfield, where we would line up on the airfield, and the caskets of our fallen brothers and sisters would be brought onto the planes. And then the ceremonies in even the remotest of locations that the unit would come together and do a video of and send it back to the family to show that we paid our respects to their family members. So it does to this day. It is an emotional time.
Absolutely. What services do you provide? Are there any, I guess I should ask if there are extra services around this time of year with veterans in the city? Is it a more difficult time for veterans, or is it just on a particular day that you look back and reflect and it hurts, and then maybe you're able to get back to a normal day's business?
Well, I think it's a time where it really brings everyone together. So it's a really unifying time.
Okay.
Where it seems like whether you were in the service or you weren't in the service, it is a time where it brings people together, because everybody knows somebody who was in the service, and a lot of people, either their own family or their friends with a family, who's lost a member in the service, whether it was, I was talking to a World War II spouse today, who lost a husband in World War II. I was, one of the things that I did want to mention was that Mayor Betancourt this year is going to be, on behalf of Governor Charlie Baker, is going to be, awarding the Medal of Liberty to 9, family members of fallen heroes from Vietnam, it being the 50th, commemoration of the Vietnam War. It started with the Chief of Staff, Chris Ryder, had contacted me and said, you know, are you aware of this medal that I've been contacted by the legislative liaison over at Hanscom, and he let me know about it. And under Massachusetts law, the Medal of Liberty is awarded to service members who are killed in action or who died of wounds they suffered in a designated combat area. So once he gave me that piece of information, we went out to the monument and we looked at the 13 names of the 13 service members who died in Vietnam. And we started trying to track down the families. And we're proud to say that we've reached 11 of the families during that time, and a couple of them are going to be out of state. Nine are receiving the award, and the other two, Ralph Maney and Richard Carter, where we are still looking for those family members. So if you're out there listening, we would appreciate it very much if you contact City Hall, because we want to recognize those two fallen heroes as well as everyone else.
Absolutely. That's fantastic work. Congratulations on that, Steve. That's amazing. It's just amazing, you know, and that you're able to do that. And it does bring, I'm glad you say that it does bring people together, because, you know, I'm the son of a combat veteran, and he lost a lot of guys over the years. And, you know, he never begrudged people on Memorial Day to get out there and have a good time with your family. So I think that, you know, it's probably it's a bittersweet day, but it's not a bad way to kick off summer, I suppose.
Yeah, you know, I think that. One of the things I've been doing for a few years is going to school on the GI Bill, and what drives me, because I lose time with my wife, I lose time with our daughter, and I still have one more year to go, so I'm going to lose time with my son, who's coming in about four more weeks.
Oh, wow, congratulations.
Thank you. Woo. Thank you. And one of the driving forces that, you know, to go into Boston a couple of nights a week and make that sacrifice, and part of why I do that is because those 51 soldiers who gave their lives just in my unit, they would want everyone to live their lives to the fullest, to be happy, and to celebrate and enjoy life and live it to the, make, as they say, carpe, my father used to tell me, carpe diem,
mm-hmm.
You know, make each day count. And I think that's what they would want us to do. So when we line the streets of Peabody and we, cheer on the parade and you know, we're not only showing the respect to our fallen heroes, but we're moving forward and the way that they would want us to.
Oh, that sounds great, man. I tell you, my dad used to tell me he would see people protesting, and there's a lot of negativity, as you well know, on social media, especially when it comes to the flag and veterans and so on. And some of the people who are so negative are not necessarily veterans, by the way. But he would say, you know, that's what we fought for. I don't like it. I don't like the way people don't stand for the national anthem or whatever. He said, but that's what we did. That's what we fought for, the right to be able to do whatever you want to. And so to hear you say that, it makes me feel good. And I applaud what you've done and what you are doing. And, Steve, is there anything else maybe that you might want to mention about the Peabody Veterans Services or Memorial Day weekend that I haven't asked you about?
Well, Memorial Day weekend, or Memorial Day, we kick off at 9:30 at Cedar Grove with a ceremony in the new veteran section, which is called the Veterans Reflective Park. And Dave Cronin, the superintendent of the cemetery, did a wonderful job of putting that together. It is stunning over there, and I just want to invite everyone to come out and see that. And after that, at 11 o'clock, the parade starts, and the family of the Gold Star families that we have of those fallen heroes are going to be on a special Gold Star family float in the parade, and ending at 11:45 at City Hall is when the award's going to be handed out to the family members. I really do think it's a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity, because the family members are going to be recognized. There's going to be a photo opportunity afterwards for all the family members. And very rarely in life do I think that you track down the history and then get the family members of those fallen heroes off of a monument and bring them all together. It is going to be a very special day in this city on Memorial Day. Very, very special day.
I think
people remember for a long time.
That is fantastic. The mayor sent me the complete schedule. Daryl McCarthy sent it over to me, and I'm going to read it during the program. I'll read it again. But, Steve, I do want to talk to you again. Maybe I can come by and do an in-person interview and meet you sometime so that we can sit down and have a much more in-depth interview.
It would be my honor.
No, it would be mine. And, again, you know, it sounds trite sometimes when people say it, but thank you so much for what you do and what you have done. And good luck with the next kid, and congratulations.
Hey, thank you so much, sir. You have a great day.
All right, Steve, take care. Thank you very much.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
That is Steve Patton, who is the Peabody Veterans Service Agent in that city. Wow, there you go. Man, oh my goodness. All right, Bill, busy hour, but it gets a little emotional there when you talk to Mike Schultz, Steve Patton, and talk about the real meaning of Memorial Day.
Yeah, he was fantastic, wasn't he? A man. Those are the real stories.
Yeah.
You know, and I, you know, it's really exciting to hear from somebody like Steve, who's been just recently returned from military service, if you will. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, we're going to talk to him down the road. He was talking about some services that are still available, believe it or not, for World War II veterans or their widows that they don't know about. Same thing for Vietnam survivors. There are programs available through the federal government that they're not even aware of. And Steve was mentioning particularly due to Agent Orange. And so I'll be seeing the former Captain Patton in a couple of weeks, hopefully at the latest, and we'll get more information about that.
Well, Memorial Day is on Monday. And, Rick, we do have a couple of notes here. I know that Nahat has their town parade in the morning, and then Lynn will have their parade in the afternoon. They all that parade in Lynn begins at the North Shore Community College parking lot, which is right off Washington Street, which is toward the ocean by the Seaport Landing area as well. And then they marched down to City Hall Square, North Common Street, Boston Street, and on to Pine Grove Cemetery. And again, that is on Memorial Day. And then they have the Memorial Day ceremony. I guess it's Monday at about 2:30 p.m. And then, but the parade's stepping off at about 12:30. So that's a long one in Lynn. And that's in the afternoon on Memorial Day.
A lot of stuff going on elsewhere too, Bill. In Peabody, we're going to go back to Peabody for a minute. They actually have 3 days of activities. They're actually Friday, Sunday, and Monday. On Friday, tomorrow, there will be the flagging of the veterans' graves. The host organization, the Veterans of Foreign Wars Post 10/11, will be placing flags on the veterans' graves. On Sunday, there'll be Memorial Day Mass at 8 a.m. at St. Adelaide's Church. And following the Mass, there'll be a memorial service held at the school department building. And then that's on Sunday. And on Monday, 8:30 a.m., the VFW bus will leave for services at Cedar Grove. And 9 a.m., they'll be forming up for the parade, assembled at 10:30. And then 11 o'clock, the parade steps off and marches to City Hall. This is in the city of Peabody. In Newburyport, they're doing something a little bit different. I don't have the actual Memorial Day activities, but there is a special feature for families. And Steve Patton was mentioning it is a time for families to get together and be together. And one of the events up in Newburyport is that there will be three tall ships that will sail into the harbor this Memorial Day weekend. And they'll be at dock for 5 days. Custom House Maritime Museum board members announced this last week. The ships will be the highlight of the museum's maritime days. The schooners Adventure and Alabama have committed to participate. And I understand that both the Alabama and the Adventure are in Newburyport right now. My wife took some pictures. I hope to post them later on of those boats up there. And, of course, Adventure being resurrected in Gloucester. So a nice family activity over the Memorial Day weekend up in Newburyport. And, Bill, if I may, on Cape Ann, very quickly, the Gloucester Times is reporting that in Gloucester, the Memorial Day parade steps off Monday at 9 a.m. from Gloucester High School, proceeding to the World War II Memorial at McKinnon Triangle at Kent Circle, where the day's main ceremony will take place. They'll be going to other places as well, and there will be a march. And Gold Star wife Lauren Foster Ayubi of Gloucester, the widow of Sergeant James Anthony Ayubi, who was killed in 2010 in Afghanistan, will deliver the keynote address. That's in Gloucester. And give me 1 second here. Elsewhere on Cape Ann, in Rockport, the Memorial Day Parade starts Monday at 10 a.m. from Legion Hall, proceeds down Beach Street to Main Street, then to School Street. You heard Heather Atwood talk about that. That's quite a parade and quite an emotional event in Rockport. In Manchester by the Sea, the Manchester by the Sea Memorial Day Parade steps off Monday also. This is at 8:30 at the American Legion Hall, 14 Church Street. And let's see, it will proceed through town, stopping along the way for the laying of wreaths at several gravesites before continuing back to Legion Hall, where luncheon will be served. And then, finally, in Essex, Essex Memorial Day services will be held on Monday. The services will begin at Memorial Park behind Town Hall at 9 a.m. and then proceed down Martin Street, Route 22, to Pickering Street towards the Spring Street Cemetery for a salute to the fallen, among other activities as well. And you can check out online yesterday's Gloucester Times for more details on those events.
Rick, as Ed McMahon would say, there right there is right there in that little list that you right there, Rick, is everything that you need to know.
Yeah, about
Memorial Day.
I wonder how many of our listeners know who Ed McMahon was. But you point out Ed McMahon. Go ahead.
He was in the Army or military.
Marine.
Marine. He was a Marine.
Yeah, he was a Marine. Yeah. Yeah, he was in combat. Yes, sir. And that's right. It's everything you need to know. Well, Bill, this has been a fun hour, a fast hour, a full hour. And again, I think you're so good at promoting what we do. Maybe you can mention again what we're doing and how maybe we can get some ideas to continue this thing.
Absolutely. So Thursday, connections. But between now and then, email us if you have some ideas of some possible guests, some great people, interesting people. Some interesting people that we talked to in this past hour. So that's what we're looking to do. And check us out and do email us. The email is msonewsports@gmail.com, and it's right up there on our link to our website as well. You can copy it off the link. And but do shoot us an email. We'd love to hear from you.
All right, Bill, I appreciate it. Thank you, and have a great day. Talk to you later.
You got it.
All right, that is Bill Newell. I'm Rick Moore, producer and engineer Bill Proposky. This is Connections.